All right, welcome everyone back from the breakout rooms. Before we move on, I just want to say if you're watching this on video or recording, we are on the precept of do not steal, honor the gift not yet given. And I forgot to hit record at the beginning of the talk, so you're coming in just after a breakout room where people were discussing ways in which stealing or theft might be a part of their life. And the sort of moral guidelines we put up on which stealing and theft we're okay with and which we're not. And so we're just going to have a discussion about that. Welcome back, everyone. I hope you guys had a good discussion, useful discussion. And if folks would want to bring up anything they might have spoken about in their groups, any interesting discussions you had, I think we would love to hear it. We have right, Veronica, you can go right ahead.
We had talked about lots of different things, but one of the things that came up across a few different people was technology and sort of like media account sharing or downloading things without proper permissions, things like that. So that's one thing that we've gotten a little bit used to and maybe aren't always thinking about.
Yeah, I'd totally forgotten about account sharing, which is funny because my family all does it.
And we
So.
talked about there is a certain amount of account sharing that's allowed, that's totally within, but then there might be other things that are a bit gray or even less, even darker gray.
Thank you, Linda.
Yes, hello. Tyler, you were talking about food before. So I had recently ordered groceries for myself and my friend who had knee surgery to be delivered to her house. And then I would just take my groceries home after I left from helping her. I ordered from Safeway Grocery. They charge a delivery fee. And I've ordered from them before and everything's been fine. But this time there were like four or five things that they didn't give me. But then they gave me one thing that I didn't order. But because it was for my friend, I needed to leave her house, go to the store, get the rest of the things for her, and bring them back. And so then I had to call the central place where the deliveries come from because you can't just deal with it at the grocery store. You have to call, and then they'll refund you for what they didn't bring. But the thing that they brought me that I didn't order, that they delivered was a block of Tillamook cheese. But because I had to go to the store, and even though I'd already paid the delivery fee and then I had to go shopping, I just didn't bring up the cheese. But like my husband was there and my friend was there who had the knee surgery, and I said, I feel really guilty about this, this because that's not just usually how I operate. And they're like, don't even say anything because they messed up the order so bad and you have to go to the store, but you still have to pay the delivery fee. So just don't worry about it. But I still feel guilty about it. So that's my story.
Thank you, Linda.
Sure.
Yeah, it's interesting how like I feel like I would probably do something fairly similar. And so I create this sort of like, well, I'm sort of entitled to that extra thing because I had to do all these sorts of things. And chances are if you had said it, they might have been like, eh, keep the cheese, whatever. But because they probably can't take it back. But it's but yeah, that's really interesting. And that you still the you said you still feel guilty about it later. And I find it interesting how we how we have or how we work how we may or may not work through guilt sort of as we go along. Andrew, yeah.
Anyone who wants to add.
Hello. So this wasn't my thought, but it kind of stuck with me. Thank you, Drew, for bringing this up. But the concept of time theft was broached, and not in the corporate sense that we've sort of grown accustomed to hearing about it over the last few years, but actually like sort of time theft as a concept in your life. And he, Drew used the example of, just the example of like, well, if I hadn't stayed up, you know, this late tonight, the next day, would I have had more energy to have maybe engaged more with my kids or with my family or something like that? And I hadn't heard the concept of time theft in that context of like in your own personal life. It's like, what are you robbing from yourself and maybe other people in your life by maybe not applying yourself more mindfully in certain situations? And I thought that was really valuable to hear.
Thank you, Andrew. I'm so glad that topic got broached. Did any other groups discuss sort of theft in that sort of, in something more in that sort of genre is not the right word, in that sort of way? I have some things that I've thought about too, but I was curious if anyone else, if that came up in any of the other groups. Yeah, Coral.
Yeah, we talked about a little bit about like stealing opportunities from people to learn, you know, like maybe we're stealing an opportunity to like impact from somebody by a child, maybe by, you know, not allowing them to learn or to fall when trying something new. Or also stealing an opportunity of like, you know, when there's somebody at work that is really just not good at their job, so everybody kind of awkwardly maneuvers around them so that they don't have to interact with this person, but you're really stealing an opportunity from this person to getting better at what they do just by being patient and just working through the motions with them anyway.
Yeah, thank you. I when you mentioned the kids, I often think kind of by the end of the day, as a preschool teacher, when a child comes running up and wants to like tell me this big long story about something, and I don't have it in me, or for whatever reason I get distracted, they don't get to have my attention to kind of be excited about that thing, and I can see they feel like maybe they're blown off a bit, and I feel like I stole an opportunity for them to like express their joy, and that's a hard thing to realize afterwards, because it's not necessarily, it's obviously not intentional, but it's there, and it's a type of theft, I think.
Absolutely. And like, you know, or maybe like letting a child cook something that you know they're gonna mess up or something, you know, letting them do these things that you know they're not gonna do great.
letting kids fail, like there's that first attempts in learning, that's huge, letting kids fail at something in a safe environment. And you popped up another one that made me think of, it's left my head right now, but that's fine. And there's a hand up in the Doan. I don't know who that is. It might be the mask or just my understanding. So
I just sent you a text.
Jeff.
Or in the chat. I was just in our group, we started talking about things, you know, that were not like, not real concrete possessions, but my son and I had been really, really close ever since he was little, because there were no children in our neighborhood. And so I, you know, felt like, oh, I'm a dad and, you know, I need to give him my time. But then he's gotten older and we've had this struggle where he just is really pulling away and it's hard, you know, it's hard for me to let go. And so I realized, wow, one day I just realized I'm holding on to something that doesn't belong to me and it's his life. You know, I need to let go of that and I need to give that back to him. And so it was kind of similar to what Coral was talking about, you know, that it was kind of keeping him from getting some opportunities and doing things that he needed to be able to go do. So that's it.
That's beautiful. Thanks, Jeff. Yeah. Giving someone the gift of you know, letting go, that's and letting them be. And yeah, that is in line with the Coral's. And as I say, we often, the one was boredom, allowing kids to be bored. Stealing the opportunity, just keeping them always busy with something because you don't want them to be bored. I think sometimes really taking was what something else that popped in my head, what Coral was talking about. Benny, yeah.
Thank you. Hello. I was just thinking what I did for a big part of my life was not asking for help. Other people not asking for help. And so not, you know, like it's kind maybe of stealing the opportunity for others to help you. And even in rejecting help is a more, I would say, a more active form of that. And yes, so helping is most, I think, one of the most precious things you can do. Like, it's a real opportunity, theft thing.
Amazing. Thank you, Benny. Gathel.
Theft or stealing is a complex topic. I mean, I'm looking at the monastic code, about 2,000 years old, that was written ago. And under killing, it's pretty straightforward. Don't kill someone. Don't encourage someone to kill someone else, and don't encourage someone to kill themselves. Then you go on the stealing, it's like 4 or 5 pages long discussing it. And I was just thinking of something that, you know, another one that's come up in the last few years is theft, and in particular, in some ways, cultural appropriation.
Hmm.
We've become more aware of our relationship with other cultures and what is intrinsically their culture. And I remember one of the first examples of this, there were two women in Portland that opened a food cart, and they were white Americans, but they were serving Mexican food. And they talked about in their Facebook page how they went down to Mexico and people wouldn't share the recipes with them. So they actually spied on the people to find out how they were doing things. Needless to say, their food cart did not do well. But that's definitely, that's, you know, even though it's intangible, that's definitely stealing. You know, there's no object to steal, but you're stealing an intangible cultural possession.
Yeah, thank you, Gathlin. Something before we're not wrapping up quite yet, but something I definitely want to talk before I wrapped up was something about understanding our role and in culture and that sort of thing and theft. And so I really appreciate that example. So it gets quite complex, especially now as people are much more cognizant of people are ready to tell you you're doing something wrong, but it can be hard to know exactly how we can appropriately interact with other cultures and enjoy other cultures and that sort of thing. Jinryu.
One of the things that came up in our little group discussion was the effect on others when someone is late. Mm-hmm. And specifically, if I'm waiting here for someone who was supposed to be here 10 minutes ago, you know, they're really wasting my time, which is a form of stealing. And it can feel that the other is inconsiderate. And there are two things about that. One, you know, it's one thing when it's in a professional setting. We talked about a school setting, a college setting. I mean, there's consideration for your fellow students. There's consideration for the professor. It's another thing when it's in a working or corporate environment, because you are really stealing time from the company. And then stealing time from others when one is late. And the reason why I'm hesitating to say this is the minute, especially the latter example where it's just between people, Sangha members, other people in the community, the minute I begin to identify this as anything untoward, I will be late the next time. And then it's going to be on me. I mean, there's a certain amount of humanity and compassion in all of this that we have to have. And I was telling in my group, I don't know if I'm taking things personally less. I don't know what it is, but I tend to be far more forgiving now and far less intense about this time stealing thing, this lateness thing than I used to be. I'm losing an interest in being rigid about anything, really. So that's all.
Thank you, Jennifer. Ruth Ann, did I see you were running? Did you have something you wanted to say?
Oh, hi. I think that our language can reflect some underlying thinking. And pre-COVID, it was pretty much almost a layer of generation for someone to say, well, I'm entitled, no matter what. And I remember waiting in line at the deli. I liked watching the sandwich maker. This happens to be at New Seasons, and they take time to make something. And this, I started chatting with this person who, I don't know, she was maybe in her mid-30s, and she said, well, I just feel entitled. And I thought, and I'm waiting for the rest of what she's entitled, like, why? And I just thought, well, entitled is good as long as everyone else is entitled. So I think that stealing or taking something away from some unknown person just reflects a lack of equanimity on a deeper level in not just our language, but in our how we navigate and survive. Thank you.
Thank you, Ruth Ann. Yeah, how we, there's a hand. Oh, that's not, there's no one sitting at the Doan thing. It's just a hand up now. It's okay, Jimmy. It just threw me off there for a sec. There's so many ways in which this this precept can be engaged with, as I say, wrestled with in our life. If we take moments to kind of reflect on where we might be stealing, how we might be stealing, we've all heard a lot of different examples, and it can take a really mindful or purposeful sit down with yourself and trying to kind of see where these things might come in and how you may or may not want to change some of them. And so how we practice with this precept, I guess, feels like a very introspective sort of thing that we need to do. And it's sort of an odd one and a bit to practice with too, I think, in that it's not, I say, with the not killing one, there might be a bit more sort of really tangible things you can do with this one. But one thing I wanted to talk about a practical thing that I know that's happening more and more out there, but one theft that goes on and has been going on for a long time and continues to go on that's being talked about more and more is the land that we live on. And that is the land that has been stolen from Indigenous peoples and continues to be stolen in different ways. These people also, as was brought up a little bit, have had their I should speak specifically to the Canadian situation. I know that this went on in the States, but it's probably different. Indigenous peoples in Canada had their land stolen. They had their culture and language stolen, and they had their, in Canada, they literally had their children stolen. And this was something that we all still benefit from. A lot of white settler, Canadians benefit from. But at the same time, I happen to own a house, I happen to own a piece of land. Even if I were rich enough, sorry, I don't know if someone's unmuted. Even if I were rich enough to buy land and try to give it back, right? So here you can have land, you can have some land back. It's not that simple, because they would still just own, an Indigenous person might own Canadian land. But it's a really complicated thing on how we engage with something such as stolen land, stolen culture, and the people that we live in. But it's something that's, I think, really important work that we need to be doing. So it's just one example that I want to bring up. And one way that they say to do that, that we can start reconciling or engaging with this sort of this theft that's gone on, is understanding where we are, whose territory we're on, the language that they speak, and starting to learn a little bit about their culture. And not in a way so we can make a land acknowledgement and then move on, but in a way that we can actually sort of begin to engage and reconcile with the land that we're on. So I wanted to share, some folks may already know this, of this site here, but I'm gonna share my screen quickly. And it's called nativeland.ca, and it's an interactive map that folks can check out. And I really suggest, if you haven't seen it, that you do. And you can basically, it's created by an organization. You can zoom in to, so for example, I'm gonna zoom in, where are we here? Keep zooming. And I can come down to, so here we can see, this is what, you know, I refer to as, so it's probably hard to see because this keeps popping up, but the Lekongwen and Songhees right here that I'm pointing at right there, that's where I live. I'm on Tsuk Nation territory. But what's nice about this is it's an opportunity to, you can find the map, find where you are on the map, and then it gives you all sorts of links to information about the land you're on, the language. You can start to learn certain words if you want. There's just, and gives you kind of more information about whose land you're on, things that are going on there, ways to support Indigenous peoples that you might want to, because, you know, it's an ongoing thing, and it happened, it feels like maybe it happened in the past, but certainly in Canada, it continues to be an ongoing thing. So we have their land, and now they're asking us not to be logging certain portions of it, but we're doing it anyways. So it continues, and we can do work we can to support these folks. We can't do everything, and you know, we can't do we can't solve the problem necessarily, but it's one way that our practice, I think, as Buddhists, we can engage with this in just one tangible way. There might be more ways. There are lots of other ways we can engage with this precept. But I thought I would at least share that one. And in case you're interested, I'll put the link in the chat. And you guys can, if I'm not careful, I'm going to send that just to Bob, which feels a bit poignant. And so you can find your space wherever you are and learn a little bit about where you are. And I think that's one important practice we could be doing in that. So, in case there, unless there is any other, anyone has any other comments or questions. Ruth Ann, was that you? Nope, all right. I wouldn't want to steal a moment for us all to hear from Ruth Ann, because she's always got something lovely to say.
I'm going to say a short story. When I was new still to Bright Way, one of the Sangha members gave a talk on this very precept, and Dawn and her husband moved to Eugene, so she's not in the area. And Domio's sweet dog, that's not a puppy, but she's still pictured in some of the pamphlets, and Suki was there in the outer room, in the waiting room, the entry room. And I said, oh, she's so cute. I just would love to take her home with me. And Dawn nailed me and said, that's stealing. And I just froze. I didn't realize that popped out of my mouth. And I thought, it can be such a part of our language. But, you know, I'm a dog lover, and I wanted to hug the dog. And so, but sometimes it becomes common in our thinking, I think. Thank you so much, Tyler, and everyone else.
Thank you so much, Ruth Ann. And on that lovely story, it's 9. Oh, careful. Didn't see you there. My apologies.
I didn't realize it was so late. I was just going to make a comment. I've been looking at a more lengthy version of the precepts from the monastic, and they do comment that it's not the thought, it's the act. So if you think you and desire something, obviously there's other ramifications for your karma there. But if you don't act on it, it's not still.
There you go. Yeah, and that's really interesting, because some talk about, you know, the desire and how that plays into it. And, you know, we could, I'm sure we could keep going on and chat about that side of it for very some time. But luckily this will come up again and again, I think, throughout our life and throughout our precept studies. So unless there's anything else, we offer the merits of this Sangha meeting to all, so they may be able to obtain the truth. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, Bodhisattvas, Mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, Maha Prajna Paramita.
Thank you, Tyler. Thank you.